Namaste. Thank you for being here. Today we are going to walk into month 7, where we are talking about designing or redesigning your business model, taking together everything that we have worked on over the last 6 months. So this month we're really talking about form, putting it into form. When we talk about a model, we are talking about a masculine and an element of structure, to putting that to the feminine element of passion and creativity, to create a container for creativity. So you can think of the model with your offer structure and your business model, that this is what's giving your work form, a form that can be brought into and consumed, if you will, taken advantage of by the world. So we're also talking about where the work that we've been doing, which has been primarily focused on you and about you personally, your relationship to work and your relationship to the business. Now we're starting to look at, okay, well, where and how does that meet the world? Because to be a business that supports your life, it needs to meet needs of the outside world to create that exchange, so that it can not only be something that you love, but be something that has an exchange of money that supports the life that you are wanting to live. So a lot of this month will be energetically, in our practices, we'll be looking at that interplay. We'll be looking at the interplay between masculine and feminine. How do they relate? How do they support each other? What does each one feel like? What is the role of each? My guru said that the feminine, the mother, is wild, okay, and she must be contained. So it's the structural elements, the masculine container elements that constrain it. And you can think that all work has a structure. All art has a composition. It can be flexible, non-rigid. Sometimes if we try and impose a composition, especially if you think about a piece of artwork, it becomes awkward, right, instead of beautiful. But there is an inherent composition to all work, all art, and it follows certain very basic rules that you think about. The composition of a painting or a musical score, composition is really inherent to what makes it beautiful, okay? And if you've worked in any artistic mediums or with space in any way, or music, words even, you'll know that when you work with it, when you try to pull together an entire piece, when you play with the composition alone, it changes the entire piece. It changes the feeling, the message. It changes its level of harmony. It changes its beauty. So that's the piece that we're working on in your business right now, is to find the right composition for it, both in terms of for you, but also where it meets the world and how it serves the world. And the challenge for you this month is to see it, okay? Not to use your mind to impose it, but to see it and to feel it, like a sculptor, chipping, carving away at what it is not, letting what it is not drop away so that what it is comes into fruition. And you've now done 6 months of committed deep spiritual practice. Really, these are deep practices, and I'm not playing when I give these to you. My guru said about yoga, there are no beginners to her. They come on in, jump into the deep end. So just know that, you've been doing the work. You have the depth. You had the depth already, or you just wouldn't have drawn you in working in this way. You have the depth. You have the tools to do this. And to let it, to chip away at the form of your work like a sculptor, as opposed to imposing it on, like, from your mind. But know also that your mind is going to want to take over at this stage if it hasn't already tried along the way. Okay, there are lots of things for your mind to get into this month and think, oh my God, I know best about this. This is the way you have to do it. So your mind might think it knows best. You might feel really compelled to do it the way that you've always done it or the way that your industry does it because, well, it's safe. That might be a triggering word, but it's known, let's put it that way. Right, and the devil we know is typically better than the devil we don't. You might feel like your mind is freaking out and telling you, well, you have to be more acceptable. You can't make this change that feels really out there or that is like maybe nobody else in the world that you operate in or that the industry that you're in is doing it. And so there might be a feeling or a message of, well, I have to be more acceptable or I'll fail or I'll just be ousted. Mind could come in that way. Mind might want you to stuff a lot more into your work or what you offer for the same price to prove yourself or to be worthy of the money that you're asking for. Mind might want you to make your work or your business bigger or grander or bolder than really it wants to be or that is the right fit for you. Or on the opposite end, it might be telling you, you know, let's keep it smaller, less significant than its real size. One of the things that Stephen Cope in his book, The Great Work of Your Life, talks about Dharma, which we did not talk about during the Dharma phase, but is important as you begin to think about adjusting or completely redesigning or embarking on something new. Some of you will be making adjustments to what you've already put in place and the way you've worked for a while so that it becomes more yours, more in line with who you most deeply are, that it comes more from yourself with a capital S. Others of you may be creating something completely different, embarking on something completely new. Either way, the mind can operate in these ways. And one of the ways, as I said, is this idea of being grander or being smaller than you are or that your work is or is meant to be in the world. So one of the things that Stephen Cope says about Dharma is that it has to have the right size. It's kind of an odd thing to think about, but it has to have the right size. It can't be too big a scale, right? Or it just all won't seem to work out. And it can't be too small, or you'll feel completely confined and contained. And so what he recommends is paying close attention to this, but also making the small big. So starting with the small as an access point to the larger piece. So we'll be thinking about the right size of the work that you're doing. And it may change over time. Also, the right size of it now may not be the right size in 2 or 5 or 10 years. And I would encourage you to see if you can think about size. As I said, that size is going to be something that your mind wants to think about. It wants to think about it in terms of how many clients you serve, it wants to think in numbers, how large an audience you have in some cases. It might think about, oh, okay, I need to be this big in revenue. It might be, oh, I need to have this level of reputation. That's the way the mind is going to think about the size of your Dharma and therefore the size of your business. So I would encourage you to use the practices that we're going to do this month, but also right of connection with your source, with the divine that you have enveloped over the last 6 months, to feel into this, okay, energetically. See if you can view size of your work and shape of your work energetically. What I put that to you as a possibility, as a challenge. There is something going on outside this window. I do not know if you can hear it. But it is okay. It is a truck, and it seems to be going away. Okay. So up to this point, I was saying on the work that we've been doing, when we've talked about your work and we've talked about your Dharma, it has been a really focused on you. And I said that to be a business that supports your life, it needs to meet the needs of the world. Okay? We have talked about how vast, infinite, pure consciousness has manifests individually in you through the five sheaths of the body, each of which has its own five intelligences. We've talked about the patterns it creates in your Dharma, as a, your Dharma archetype. So there are patterns. There are patterns that it takes, okay, that makes sense because they are you as you are expressed in the world, your Dharma archetype, your dosha. One last thing that I would like to raise as you're thinking about pulling together a model is the intimacy distance at which you like to work or you thrive working. And when thinking about that, you can think about it as like a lens. Like what lens do you like to look through? At what distance? And I love the book, The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp. It's all about this. It's all about how you create habits, how you create structure that actually evoke, stimulate your creativity. And so she has a thing to tell. She says something about blend or distance, and I am calling that intimacy, especially for those of you who work with clients, right? You work with other people closely or at some range. So one of the decisions to make or understand about yourself is at what distance, at what intimacy distance do I really excel and blossom? And Twyla Tharp explains it this way. And it's very akin to your Dharma archetype and your dosha being just the way that you are, the way that pure consciousness, that the divine manifests through you. She has this to say, I believe that we all have strands of creative code hardwired into our imaginations. These strands are as solidly imprinted in us as the genetic code that determines our height and eye color, except they govern our creative impulses. They determine the forms we work in, the stories we tell, and how we tell them. I'm not Watson and Crick. I can't prove this. But perhaps you also suspect it when you try to understand why you're a photographer, not a writer, or why you always insert a happy ending into your story, or why all your canvases gather the most interesting materials at the edges, not the center. In many ways, that's why art historians and literature professors and critics of all kinds have jobs to pinpoint the artist's DNA and explain to the rest of us whether the artist is being true to it in his or her work. I call it DNA. You may think of it as your creative hardwiring or personality. When I apply a critic's temperament to myself to see if I'm being true to my DNA, I often think in terms of focal length, like that of a camera lens. All of us find comfort in seeing the world either from a great distance, at arm's length, or in close-up. We don't consciously make that choice. Our DNA does, and we generally don't waver from it. Rare is the painter who is equally adept at miniatures and epic series, or the writer who is at home in both historic sagas and finally observed short story. Focal length doesn't only apply to photographers, it applies to any artist. And earlier in the book, she also talks about, and I would add here, that it applies to anyone with work. It applies to any of us doing our work in the world. So if you think about your dharma archetype, your dosha, and your intimacy distance as your DNA, as the DNA that needs to be gathered together or understood really and stood in and expressed through your work and through the business that you structure around your work, it can be a touch point for you, like Twyla with the critic, to say, as I'm structuring this, okay, am I being true? You know, am I being true to my own makeup, to the depth of who I am and just how I operate and experience the world? Am I being true to my constant orientation? And again, I'll give you some more tools, but I ask you to feel this, again, as opposed to answer from your mind. Sometimes I realize that my mind wants to have one idea about who I am, actually have a way of kind of energetically sizing that up, the truth of that. And I don't have a word necessarily for that energy. So I couldn't like characterize it as a feeling necessarily, or a thought in any way, shape, or form, but it's something I experience, and through that experience can understand whether there is harmony in that, right? Whether there's a match or whether there's not. So I encourage you to start exploring that. Now, it may be energetic for you. It may be visual. You know, there are a bunch of different ways this could show up. But since you've been doing these energetic practices, not in all of you are sensitive to energy, would not be surprised if this is a very effective way of exploring it for yourself. So intimacy distance was the last thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of the key components about you that will go into your model. Okay, and so now we'll start talking about, you know, how are the ways that you experience your individuated soul and what it is here to do. How does that meet the needs of the world? You need to know what those are, or you won't have a business. And I also think you won't feel like you have lived or expressed really what you were here to do, which is be useful. We all want to be useful. And Stephen Cope calls that the call of the times. So look for or listen for the call of the times. Really, I would break this down to say, what is the world calling for right now in the state that we are in right now? Place and time that we live in. What do you hear the world calling for? Okay, it's probably not what everyone else hears the world calling for. It's probably something very specific to you, but a call nonetheless that meets the world needs, and it most likely matches up with what's calling you. Now, you might say, I don't know what the world's calling for. I don't know how this is useful to the world, but I know what's calling me. Okay, so start there. We can figure out who needs it. This is really about helping others. So here is what Stephen Cope has said about that. Dharma is born mysteriously out of the intersection between the gifts and the times. Dharma is a response to the urgent, though often hidden, need of the moment. Each of us feels some aspect of the world's suffering acutely. It tears at our hearts. Others don't see it or don't care, but we feel it, and we must pay attention. We must act. This little corner of the world is ours to transform. This little corner of the world is ours to save. So I think it's important here to note that he says that others might not see it and others might not care. I think so often we get trapped up in that. letting us stop it if at first we don't encounter those who see it the way we do so clearly, like in Technicolor, or those who don't care. They might go, and we get caught in that justifying the value or lack of value of what we're doing. So the first thing that we'll do this month that is different than the month before is look for the call of the times. Look for what is the world calling for about my work that is also calling me? Kind of what work is being called for and who needs it? How does it help others? How does it help the world itself? And the second piece of the way that it meets the world is money attunement, okay? Attuning, making sure that your wants match your needs and you know how much money that is required in the world to meet those. I have for you, I just sent it out by email, I have for you what I'm calling a money attunement worksheet. And it starts with the work that we did in month four. Ask you again, return to the way that you most want to feel and what you most value. And then map the things in your life, the areas of your life against that. So to feel this way and live this way, I've broken it down into categories. Just to feel this way and live this way in my home. And then there's a list of things that you would need in your home or want in your home to do that. I've included mine as an example. Absolutely no reason to stick with that, but just so that you've got an idea of what you could put under here, the types of things. And you'll notice that when you open the document or work with it, that as you go through that, there are both things that do cost money, and there are things that do not. So in categories are in my home, in my body, in my work, you'll notice that once we get down to, you know, in my work, I put things like things that were my values, variety, flexibility, lots of space, recurring revenue, okay, minimal admin. None of those really cost any money. The minimal admin, now we're starting to get into, okay, well, how does that happen? The way to make that happen most likely costs me money. But I've included things that are tangible and intangible, things that actually have a financial cost attributed to them, and things that don't. So I've just lumped it all in together so that I can see exactly what kind of these broad categories of my life I want in order to feel the way I want to feel and live according to what I most value. So this is the basis for the financial model of your business, okay? So your offer structure and your business model, they have to match what you need. You have to be able to bring in what you need in order to live the life that you want. So this is a first step in doing that. If you've never done something like this before, take a look. If you have, take a look and see if there's anything else in this variation that might be helpful to you. I've done a lot of this mapping. My coach here, we work with our numbers every single month. And so I've done a lot of this, but I've never done it this way before. No one has ever asked me to do this the way that I'm asking you to do it. The closest that has ever come, it still, for me, was coming from my mind. It was not closely related to the depth of what I really, really wanted. So my intention for this money attunement worksheet is to encourage you, prompt you to get really close with what you most want in living your life. Okay, so, and when I say really close, I mean let's get your money really close to it. For those of you who I think it's every, yes, pretty much everybody. For those of you who are not pleasure archetypes, okay, aren't merchants, getting really close to the desire and attaching the money to, okay, well, this is the way I want to live, and having that very grounded, and you feeling very centered in it, that has been very, very helpful to me as a way of, that's the reality of money to me. Let's put it that way. Then it becomes a reality. Then it's not a number out here that I'm reaching as a goal. It's something along my life path that's unfolding that I'm very close to. And there's something magical that happens in that I can't quite understand. But I have to have things very, very close, okay, and very, very grounded in order for there to be kind of a seeing of realistic financial reward that actually supports what I want. So this is to encourage you to bring all of that very close to you and match it up very nicely so that you have that to work from. And it begins the basis of your financial model. So, as I said, there are going to be a lot of things this month that your mind can attach to. This is probably the first, okay? It's, well, maybe I shouldn't spend that much money on this, or maybe I should spend more, or maybe my house is too grand, maybe it's too modest, you know, maybe somebody will judge me. I've never spent that much on this before. Oh, gosh, I've always spent that much on it, and it seems like, gosh, I should get rid of it now. All of that. This is where it's going to start. The other place that it's going to get attached is that I have given you a harmonic business model design workbook that takes you kind of in three question increments through a lot of the work that we've done already so that it is all in one place. This is a place where your mind could say, well, I know the answer to that question. So again, I want to take a moment to bring you out of that space and set a different space, get us to create a different space from the mind. And I would like to do that by sharing with you this month's practices so that we can move into that connected space before looking into these questions that the mind is going to want to have a better answer to than what your wisdom is telling you. So this month we will be working with the energies of the masculine and the feminine and in balancing those. So in really playing with that interplay between what does that look like? What is the interplay between a container and creativity? What is the interplay between wildness and stillness? And what is the best relationship as it expresses in my business? So we'll have two practices to do that. Of course, we'll have a breath meditation practice that uses both sides of the body. And we'll have actually two mantras this month. One mantra is Kali mantra, who is a feminine. She is the wild, wild feminine. You may have, I think I might have spoken about her in the month two about the ego. She's a wild woman. She is a slayer of the ego. She is the mother of time. That is her vibration. She keeps time. And she is known for dancing to devour darkness. And there are many, many kind of expressions or kind of Sanskrit vibratory expressions of the great divine feminine. And the reason that I chose her for this and chose this expression in relationship with the masculine is because she and the masculine Shiva, which is he is the energetic silence and stillness, kind of the first light form called a stanu, which is stillness, it's just light. So he is the energetic vibration of this great container of stillness. And she and he do a dance. So that's the first reason that I wanted to bring this to you. And the second reason is that actually the mantra while doing stamps the rhythm of that dance. Okay, so it replicates or it imitates the rhythm of that dance, which my guru ma has called the Kali rhythm beat. So that's the other reason, is that the mantra itself replicates the vibration of the dance. So I thought that was very cool and wanted you to experience that. So that's why I chose Kali and not one of the other many great expressions of the Divine Feminine. So we'll be doing a Kali mantra and then followed by a Shiva mantra, and you'll be able to feel the energetic vibrational differences. So pay attention to that. Pay attention to how it feels to do both. And before we do that, we'll be doing a breath meditation that uses, as I said, both sides of the body. So let's go ahead and begin that right now. If you can find a comfortable seat, cross-legged would be great. The floor and coming into stillness with a straight spine. Taking a breath in. Exhaling. Now roll your palms up, okay, and raise your arms. Kind of have them at the side, at your sides. Elbows are down, arms are bent. And then just drop your palms onto your thighs. Take another breath in through both nostrils. And exhale. And now bring your attention to your palms. So seeing if you can feel any energy in your palms. Drawing your attention now to the left palm, breathing in and out of the left palm, feeling a coolness. The left is the feminine with the moon. Now switching over, drawing your attention to the right palm, breathing in and out of the right palm. This is the masculine, the right side, the sun. This is the perfect day to do this, the day we're recording, the day of the solar eclipse with the new moon. And now we're going to move, go back to bringing your focus to the left palm. Breathe in through the left palm and draw the breath now up the left arm. Cross the shoulders to the heart, filling the heart chakra, and then exhale out the right arm, drawing the breath down the right arm and out the right hand. And now inhaling, switching, drawing in, breathing into the right palm, up the right arm, drawing in the masculine energy to your heart. And exhaling out the left, down the left arm, out the left palm. Inhaling into the left palm, up the left arm. Coming across the shoulders, entering the heart. And exhaling out the right palm. And continuing this breath, inhaling again through the right and across, out to the left. Inhaling and exhaling. Continuing to wash the body from side to side, inhaling to the right, and exhaling to the left. One last cycle, inhaling up the left arm, into the heart, and exhaling out the right. Inhaling again on the right, through the palm, drawing the energy up the right arm. And exhaling across the body, out the left. And now drawing your attention again to both palms, feeling the moon in the left hand and the sun in the right. Inhaling, drawing the hands up. And exhaling, merging the energy together, creating your own eclipse. Namaste. Take a moment to feel the balance. You feel the harmony of right and left, male, masculine, feminine, sun and moon, structure and passion. And now we'll begin our mantras. So the first mantra, Kali mantra that we'll do is Om Krim, that's with a K, K-R-I-M, Om Krim Kali. Om Krim Kali. So when it's chanted, it'll sound Om Krim Kali. Okay, so take a breath in. Exhale fully. And take a breath in to begin. Om Krim Kali, 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 Om Krim Kali. Om Krim Kali, 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 Om Krim Kali. Om Krim Kali, 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 Om Krim Kali. Om Krim Kali, 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 Om Krim Kali. Breathing in. Exhaling. Taking note of any changes in your own energy, just noting them without judgment, and letting them roll out in breath. And now we'll begin our Shiva mantra. Shiva is, well, the Kali is a wild mother energy. Shiva is a wild father energy. The energy of stillness and silence, the energy of really peace, anything that comes, you're in equanimity toward anything that comes at you. And the mantra that we will be repeating is Om Namah Shivaya, one of the oldest and most commonly chanted mantras, and as my teacher Swami Jayadevi describes it, it's really like saying, please, please free me, liberate me, okay, from what I am attached to. So it's Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, and it's chanted pretty like a monotone. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Okay? So taking a big breath in, full breath, preparatory, and exhaling that breath out fully. And then taking a breath in to begin our mantra. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya, 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 Om Namah Shivaya. 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 Bringing your awareness to your energy now. Experiencing stillness. Reaching one last breath through silence. Exhale fully. Letting the breath rise up and out the top of the head. And then drawing the breath down again gently back into the body. And coming now to soft, easy breaths. And now asking from this space, what form does my work want to take? What adjustment does that require? Who does it serve? Drawing one last breath in, exhaling, blinking your eyes open gently, coming back if you can after that. I wanted to ask you, on that space before moving into the workbook I prepared, because I think there is a hesitation, not a hesitation, a habit, an inclination to dive right into questions and make them heady. And I didn't want you to get too stuck on the form of this workbook that I have offered you. If you were able to download it to have available to look at, go ahead and take a look now. On the first page after the cover page, I have a graphic. It should be, if you want to print it out, it should be large enough for you to write right on. That depicts a lot of what we have gone over so far. So in the center, you'll see you with three circles. And this is a gift diagram of your talent, experience, and passion. And where that intersects is how your unique gift is expressed. It can be, you know, what is it that you bring? You can get even more specific. It might be that there's an intersection of these things, but that you express it in a particular way. So, for example, if I were to take a look at my law practice, like what my particular gift is in that arena, one of them is that I bring great presence to meetings with corporate counsel for consultants who otherwise feel small. So I'm able to kind of command the room, if you will. Sounds like a weird thing for a yogi to say, but in that way, so I can walk that line between talking my client's kind of world and talking to these corporate lawyers. The other thing is that I always look at my clients' businesses very strategically. It's never only a legal answer. More generally, it's that I seem to be able to create synthesis of unrelated things, okay, so to combine into new business offerings for myself, but also for see that in my clients. So that would be an example of how my talents, experience, and passions kind of can come together. So that's the centerpiece. Consider that, you know, a way to figure out or express or come into like a deeper knowing or more clear articulation of your gift. Then I place your values kind of at the four directions around that as a way of being guideposts for you and how you roll out your work and how you work in your business. And then embracing that is, you know, your Dharma archetype, what you've been created to do. This is your blueprint. And even outside of that is, you know, your dosha. So how you carry that out is in rhythm with your innate constitution and harmony with your innate constitution. So if it's helpful to depict those right here on the diagram, that is what that is for, to give you a place to visually synthesize that. There's also the opportunity to synthesize it in words. If that's helpful, again, this is a place that I want your mind not to get too attached, but we'll go through expressing, you know, kind of exploration of expressing or articulating your gift, reminding yourself of what your core desired feelings are and your deep values and what that requires from you financially. And then reminding yourself again of your Dharma archetype. Why are you here? What purpose are you here to carry out? And what does that say about your orientation to your business and a satisfying relationship with money? Remind yourself of your innate constitution. This is all really a way for you to get it all in one place. You can gather all of this information together for yourself if it's helpful to pull it together in one place. And then we turn to the call of the times that I talked about earlier. You know, what's calling you? What do you hear the world calling for? And who's needing that? Who's making that call? And then related to that last question, the move into your clients and customers, that's who needs what you're offering. And they, like you, have Dharma archetypes. Their life unfolds according to a pattern of what they are naturally here to do. And so you're likely to work with one or two certain Dharma archetypes over others because of the work that you do and because of that compatibility. So my clients and customers are most likely these Dharma archetypes because there's a reason. Why are they going to want this? What are you solving? What are you giving them that they need? And the reason they need it, it's a deep call, okay? The reason they need it is because of their Dharma. The reason they need it is because it helps them carry out their purpose. And they most likely have, you know, certain innate constitutions also, and they most likely have these innate constitutions, and that's because, again, they're encountering some kind of struggle related to the nature of who they are. So it's, again, your mind could make this very surface, a very surface activity, but I'm really asking you to think about, okay, if I know about me that I'm constituted a certain way and I know the depths of the call, right, or the pain or the longing that comes from there, well, my customers, my clients have that too. And if I can identify that archetypically, right, or according to a dosha, it's going to help me connect with them. It's going to help me express what I offer and connect with them specifically. And then on the next page, we move to pulling that all together into what I'm calling your harmonic business model. I want you to feel harmony. I want you to feel that balance like you did in the meditation and the mantra practices where you have pulled all this together and you're saying, you know, this is what I want to offer structured this way. to these clients who I've identified to earn, then this is the amount that I want and need to earn. So that's your most basic business model, and set it out here very succinctly. There's something really powerful about putting things together this simply, like pulling it all in and like making one statement about it. So let me know how that goes. I know that when I have been called, it's been in a different form, but called to do things like a one-page business plan and stuff like that, it's very powerful. It gets you very, very focused. And then the next page is your harmonic offer, okay? So once you know what you're going to offer, okay, I want to offer this, broadly, we'll dig down into, okay, what does that offer look like? You know, I'm going to include what in that? How are people going to work with me? What are they going to get? You know, what's the process look like? And how much am I going to charge for it? So on this page, I encourage you to dig more into, like, the details of your offer, okay? Not just simply the broad strokes of how it's offered, but actually how people are going to work with you, what they're going to get, and how much they're going to invest in working with you. And then the last piece is, by doing that, you know, my clients can expect to have this experience, get this result, feel this way. And I encourage you to express that according to, you know, what is the best or the most conducive, what's characteristic, I should say, of your dosha, of your innate constitution. Okay, and maybe a combination of things. So for Vata constitutions, it may be that they'll have this kind of experience. And who would that be important to? Well, it may be really important to Vata people. So it'll help you also kind of hone in more closely on the archetype and the innate constitution or dosha of your clients also to say, oh, well, you know what, I can expect them to kind of have this experience or get this result or feel this way or some combination of all three of those is likely, right? And who's going to want that? Who needs that? Who's going to benefit from that? So it helps you hone in on the characteristics of your clients or customers more. So anyway, I'm excited for you at this point, so I told you so. But then I also added one extra page because after you do all of this work, which can be mind work, I want you to touch back in with yourself energetically and your wisdom, you know, and ask yourself some questions where you can feel into it energetically. So is the offer that you end up creating the right intimacy distance? You know, if you're working with large groups in a virtual setting and doing large webinars for 200-300 people, is that the right distance? Or do you want to be in a group of 25? Or do you want to be in a group of 6? Or do you want to work with people one-on-one? Do you want to work with businesses where you're working with, you know, a team of people who are calling the shots? Or do you want to work with family where it's a very intimate setting and there are intimate decisions being made? That's examples of intimacy distance. So see if what you know about the way that you excel and enjoy, whether that matches what your offer, the offer structure that you've come up with. Sometimes we can really trip ourselves up with this. So this is a good way to check in. And then, again, what's the energy of my work? Can I, when I do that practice of doing my practices and then asking, you know, what work, what form is my work taking? Can I feel that? Can I understand that as an energy? I don't have to have a name for it. You don't have to have a name for it. And does that, when I, you know, sit with my offer and the way that I'm structuring my business, is it a match? Is that a match? Okay, and then exactly the same question for the last question is, what's the right size? Right? What's the right size of my work? What's the right size of my business? Does this offer fit that? Does this offer fit what I know now about the size of my Dharma? And it's okay. Don't panic. You're like, wait, I don't know the size of my Dharma. What do you mean? You know, just what you know now. You can adjust it later. We all make adjustments. We don't get all of the information at one time. Molly's saying that's because we couldn't handle it, right? She'd say, if I showed you everything at once, like, you couldn't handle it. Like, you just, your mind, your head would be blown off. So I give it to you in pieces. I feed it to you one at a time. So, you know, we get revelation, we're understanding deeper. Understanding as we cultivate deeper listening, and as we know that we're not going to get triggered so much by the fear or the anxiety. So that is what this month is about. I am going to open it up for questions. It's about 8 past the hour, but we did start a little late, so I thank you for your extra time. Let's see if I can get this in the right mode. Okay, it's an open dialogue now. So anybody have questions about anything that we have talked about or that I've shared?
I'd love to know a little bit more about this intimacy distancing. You illustrated it a little bit more when you were going through the worksheet, but if you could just talk a little bit more about like what that means and like in a practical sense?
Sure. Like if you, okay, so let's take an analogy first. Like if you were to think about, okay, range being either, you know, from a great distance, so like landscape view, right? Or like arm's length, which is like someone sitting across the desk from you or like looking out your own window to your neighborhood kind of thing, or like really close where, you know, you can see the details of things. Again, I'm kind of using the camera lens idea. You can see the details and you want to work on the details. And, you know, you may take, to use this photograph analogy, you may take a photograph of, you know, one person's hand or one bug or, you know, an intimate placing of a setting of tea or something like that, where it's like, oh, it's about the details. So to translate kind of that analogy into a service business, we'll use a service business because you are looking at service work and wisdom work, educator type work. It'd be the difference between like, okay, the high level being, okay, you've got large groups of people. You're like one of those people who creates very large seminars, you know, very large events, sell from the stage, speak from the stage, like to work with people at that level. They're working at a group. You're giving them a program. There's not a lot of personal, you know, interaction. You're not, you may or may not be answering their questions personally, except for, like, in the context of your talk, okay? That would be, like, the landscape view. That's, like, the farthest intimacy distance that you can get, right? Where it's like I'm working with large groups of people. I'm doing, you know, a lot of one-to-many work. I'm not digging into working deeply or knowing a lot about my clients or knowing a lot about kind of their issue. I have a system. I'm presenting it. I'm giving a talk. I'm inspiring. Kind of, you know, kind of doing this high level. That's kind of a high, that's a far intimacy. That's not a lot of intimacy, right? And on the other end of the scale, right, on the other end of the scale would be intimacy where you're working with a few clients in a really deep way. You know them, you know their struggles, you know whatever aspect you're working on with them, whether it's their business or their relationship with themselves or their kids or their home or their space or their health or their body. You know it. And you want to know it. You want to know every aspect about it. You want to work with them in detail around it. So one-on-one work would be a high level of intimacy with a small number of clients where you go through a process or a relationship in which you really dig deep into one specific area. That would be a very, very high level of intimacy where you're very close, you know people very well, and you're also One other aspect of intimacy may be the level of detail. So it may be that you're focused on one aspect specifically about what's going on in this person's life. It's not like you're working on everything that comes up any day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, they hired you to work on this. So I'd say that's probably the highest level of, or the closest level of intimacy, is that level of specificity plus the level of the intimacy in the relationship. Does that make any clearer?
It does, and it also highlights which end I'm on, because I couldn't even figure out, like when I was trying to think about it, like my version of the two ends were now, in retrospect, so very close together that I was like, but I kind of feel like both. Well, okay, because I'm on the intimate end of it. I'm not on the self from the stage end of it.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
So you already, right. I mean, it might not be even something that people even need to think about, because they might feel, oh, well, that's just who I am, you know, whereas there are people who will get confused about this, whose mind, whose ego, and I can tell you this from experience, because this is what my mind does. I mean, who knows what will happen in the future, but, you know, part of me is like, oh, I'm going to go talk on a stage. This is going to be great. I love public speaking. I'm not afraid of that at all. So my mind is like, well, you should go do that. You
right.
know, I mean, Lisa Berkovich shared this experience too. I think it was in our call. I don't know. Anyway, she has shared this experience before too, where she thought the same thing. She thought she was feeling called to, you know, be in front of huge audiences. She thought that was her work. Come to find out, it's not like that at all. You know, her level, the intimacy of the work she does is very, very high. And the groups she works with, if she works with groups at all, are very, very small. And that's what's really making the difference. And that's what's giving her satisfaction and causing transformation for her clients. So there can't, you know, it sounds like you're very clear, but it can be an issue for other people who may have traits, right, or things that they enjoy that may cause them to look in a direction that's actually kind of different than the way things really unfold for them in a very satisfying way. And so that can be a little tricky. It's like, well, wait a minute. Why is this trait here then if I'm not
right.
supposed to capitalize on it?
Relate relate to that, you know, just what you said, Rebecca. I have no problems with public speaking and you know, but I just, in this conversation, I realized that, you know, my most gratifying work is on a very intimate level. And what mm-hmm. the question that comes to my mind is that, how does this relate at all, or if at all, to our dharma and the sheath? And you know, I am a big picture thinker. You know, I like to make connections and, you know, work from that high level, but in an intimate setting. And some is that they don't seem to go together necessarily, but maybe that's just my mind again. Like,
oh, Right, I think it's two different aspects.
Okay.
I actually think that they, in my experience, they function independently.
Okay.
So in other words, yes, you could have a very, like, pragmatic, very detail-oriented thinker, like an engineer, who worked at huge scale, right? I mean, and who undertook very, very high-profile projects, or something that puts them in a very, very large spotlight. And you would characterize them as having kind of a pretty big dharma, right? I mean, they kind of like have this wake that comes behind them. But their level of intimacy with their work is really small, right? They're very detail-oriented. And then you could have the kind of the opposite combination, like you're describing, and you and I are very similar in that way, where we have, like, you know, we like to have kind of 40,000 foot view. We like to recombinate things, kind of be more broad picture thinkers. But when it comes down, that's where we do our thinking. It's not necessarily where we do our work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you know, and you said that part of your archetype, you have some educator characteristics, and that's an educator characteristic that you would look at a lot of different broad things and take it in and try and understand, try and synthesize, try and glean what's interesting, what's wise, what's not, you know, and then the outsider would say, well, what's novel about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's missing? Where's the hole? Where's the gap? Where's something I haven't seen? Where's something I can say that's new or think about or adjust differently or present differently? I would say that's a different piece of your work, a different aspect of your Dharma than the intimacy level, which is, what's the relationship you want to have with the customers and the people that you're serving?
Mm-hmm.
So how would something like books fit into this? Because, like, if I'm called to that kind of broader, less intimate thing at all, it's through that medium, which is still really different from selling from a stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you're right to point out that a book has a wider or a greater intimacy distance than one-on-one work. I think, too, it can be interesting to play with that for yourself and say, you know, do I want a range of intimacy in my work? Am I not called to just one mode? Okay, right. And, you know, as an educator and as a Vata, you're not going to be called to just one mode. It might be one way you want to express yourself and then one way that you want to kind of work more, one way you want to express yourself more broadly or have kind of a wider audience at a greater intimacy distance, and then another way in which you want to work more closely and have, you know, smaller number of clients at a closer intimacy range. And you know, some people are going to choose one or the other. Some people are going to choose both, you know, and so I think that it's okay. Don't, like anything else, don't feel like you have to like be like, okay, this is it. This is my intimacy range.
Right.
Done. Because I think that's probably the worst thing that both an educator archetype and a Vata can do to themselves.
Right.
No, you're just not going to want to. Your interests are too broad.
Right.
You know, your mind is too like exploratory, and you know, your constitution is too variable and flexible and needs too much movement and variety. So give it to it. It's okay. I think that the one thing to really hone in to yourself is okay, which one of those modes? So there may be different things that kind of these different, if we were to think about intimacy, like range or distance in like three levels, right? That like really distant one, like looking at the landscape or like really large audiences without a lot of personal contact and kind of that mid-range, right, where it's like, okay, I work with groups and then they're kind of large, like the room is, you know, there may be some personal contact, there may not be at times, it differs between people, or that really, really intimate. So if there's three different levels, you may find that, you know, there are modes of work or expressions of your work that match, that are right kind of for each intimacy distance, that end up making up the whole fabric of what you offer. And that is a way to create somewhat of a funnel or pyramid, if you will. You know, I know I said that for Vatas a lot of times, but I would recommend flexible and various income streams but that are fairly flat and ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this could be an exception to that. It's not, you know, you could write a book and that could be an income stream and somebody in that book might say, hey, I need to seek this person out and I need to do work with
right.
them. That would end up being, right, that would end up being a funnel of sorts. And it's good to have that. It's good to have that variability in the way that people work or know of your work and find you.
Yeah.
Don't shy away from that piece. Anything else? How is it? How are the meditation and the mantras?
They were really awesome. Like I really felt the energy shift in a way that was much more pronounced than I had felt with the other meditations.
Yeah.
And the other mantras.
Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, I agree. I don't think I've ever felt stillness like that after the Shiva mantra ever.
Yep. Yeah, so that's what it is. That is it. That is, I mean, you know, you could just say Shiva stillness. That's it. So it'll bring you to a very, very still place. And I love, as somebody who, you know, wants to resist routine, resist structure, there's a bunch of irony in my life around that. I'm ironically somebody who really thrives when I, obviously, the thoughts are there, so thrives when I have some level of routine, especially around sleeping and eating. But what I was going to say is I really love thinking about that, thinking about structure as this container of silence and still, like thinking about it as stillness. Like that to me is appealing. It's powerful. It's like, okay, I can relax into this now. I don't need to feel like it's like somehow, I don't know, rigid. It puts a different take on kind of the masculine, linear, you know, structural aspects of things, which for me has been really rewarding. And yes, you will feel a big energy shift because they are kind of these two opposites. So if you feel like doing the mantras first and then meditation later to get some balance, you can. But typically, you know, just doing one after the other, by the end of the Shiva, you'll feel still enough to feel pretty balanced.
So I don't know if it's a question exactly, but an observation, when you were going through the worksheet and you were talking about, you know, who are you serving, and you were talking about it in Dharma archetype terms.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this came up because I'm not an outsider, right? Because for me, in the archetype, right, I'm supposed to be serving the warrior. And that totally showed up when you were asking that question, and I was just kind of sitting with it. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be serving the warriors. Now, what that really looks like, I don't know, but I guess I'm just asking, like, how much is the sort of archetypal cyclical responsibilities part of that question?
Well, I think that showed up really strongly for you, so I would go with it. And I think that you're right. I think it is part of it. I think it is part of the answer to the question. And I probably should have said that. So I'm sorry. It feels like I left that piece out now that you mentioned it. So to review, yes, there are duties, right? And there's also paths. So I didn't get into this in the Dharma talk, but whatever his name is, Chukwuemeka. Yeah. Anyway, there is a level of, there's two different things. There's a level of duty, okay, that the Dharma archetypes play to each other. There's also a path that each Dharma type walks in terms of learning the intelligence of the other, okay, in order to grow. So in the case that you're talking about, yes, the educator owes a duty to the warrior. The warrior also needs to learn the intelligence of the educator and vice versa. So that works very, very clearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the outsider and the laborer have a duty to the educator, but the educator doesn't evolve, or its path is not in taking on the intelligence of the laborer. That's
mm-hmm.
the actual devolution. So I wouldn't say that it runs clearly in every case along the lines of duty in order what they provide, but that it could consistently run in terms of, okay, how one type evolves. What does your Dharma type have to offer? Who needs to learn that? to walk their spiritual path.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that either way it could work. You could be, you know, you could look at it in terms of, okay, who owes, which archetype owes who, or I wouldn't say owe, but which archetype has a duty towards the other. And you could look at it that way. That could be a good way of thinking about clients and customers. Or it could be, okay, who is looking for my, or calling out for my particular kind of archetypical intelligence in order to grow, in order to move into and express who they are fully, who needs me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Like it says, the outsider and the laborer owe the duty to the educator, right? So they could, I mean, the outsider or laborer could serve an educator in multiple forms, right, by taking care of an educator's material needs, by providing massage, by teaching the educator to take care of their body and their material well-being, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple different variations. But I think that the key part I would pull out here is not to go quickly to the, like, logical or philosophical explanation, but to honor the fact that when we talked about these questions, immediately you had this resonant of, like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to serve these warrior types. That makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I would say honor that above the rest of this.
Right.
Because you're right. Those people are going for their goal like nobody's business. Okay? And they need the wisdom of discernment of who they actually are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was thinking about the fact that in the Tchaikovsky book, too, he talks about how we're in the Kali Yuga, and so we're in this merchant-oriented, and you talked about this merchant-oriented society, which has really sort of dislocated all of us. Dislocated warriors from their sort of position of, like, who they naturally are. And
I think there are so many professionals, Julie, so many professionals, and I don't know if you want to work with these people, but corporate types who fall into this category that you're talking about. When I saw a statistic today, actually, that was like one-third of people in corporate America, only one-third of the people in corporate America are actually satisfied or happy with their job and what they do vocationally and career-wise. That's a huge market. You know,
yeah.
And it's a market with people with recurring income for the moment, you know.
Right.
To pay for services. I mean, when I was there, I was in a large law firm. If someone could have taught me, like, the stuff that we're talking about now, I guess somebody did, right? Oh my God, I just caught the irony of that statement. I was gonna say I would have paid them so much money.
That is hilarious.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Lesson learned.
Well, and it's interesting because anytime somebody, like, brings up corporate stuff, like, my automatic reaction is, oh, hell no. But there are people, I suspect, who are my right people, who are in corporate settings, but the corporate setting is not the part that is resonant.
Right. Yeah, so I don't think it's like that piece, but it might be, or it might be people, it might be people who are looking to leave, or people who, I don't know, in transition somehow, or just...
I think it's also people who are
not a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's see. I have two people's works that you might want to take a peek at who have kind of fleshed this type of thing out, this type of work in different ways. from each other and then from, I imagine, the way you do it. So let me just look them up to make sure I've still got their site and stuff correct, and I will post that in the forum for you. You can just see kind of what people have done around. Actually, it's three people. I love it that I, like, have three clients who work with Corporate Misfit. I mean, literally, like, that's what one of them calls them. It's like genius, misfit genius or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah. She's writing a book. That's kind of great. Okay, so three people. I will get you. You can just kind of see how people have played with this idea of, you know, and some of those people may truly be warriors, and some of them kind of might be like me, who have had warrior traits and warrior phases mm-hmm. that have been really reinforced and encouraged in them, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, can be harmful or, yeah, harmful. That's the right word.
Yeah.
You know, destructive, really, personally. You know, and maybe you'll find something else out of it. But I think that, you know, since the warrior archetype came up so clearly for you, that it's worth listening to and exploring
yeah.
what kind of areas people would, where would these archetypical people show up and what would they be facing for which they
right.
you know, need your wisdom.
Right.
Nice. Well done.
Thanks.
All right. Anything else? Anne, are you good?
Sorry, I had muted myself. Yes.
It's okay.
I'm good.
Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful
Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you on
Very soon. Welcome. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.